Support for the Projection Booth podcast comes from Stitcher Smart Radio. Now podcast listeners can access the latest episodes of the Projection Booth and thousands of other podcasts on the go without downloading or syncing. Stitcher instantly delivers episodes of your favorite shows to your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio can be found in the iPhone and Android app stores or on the web at stitcher.com/booth.
Big John Taylor, mercenary, soldier of fortune. He's more than a man. He's a walking death machine. Candy O'Perrin, sexy undercover cop. Her deadliest weapon is her body. Mike O'Malley, Hollywood's top stuntman.
What do you want us to do?
Fight our champions.
Only this time, the action's for real. And Rick Chan, black belt, primed for action with one blow. The death blow. Only two words describe the power and fury of this unstoppable team. Raw force. Join them as their carefree vacation cruise turns into hell on the high seas.
What was that?
Final port of call. Warrior Island. Uncharted and unexplored.
We should not be here.
Burial grounds for martial arts masters from the past. Their resting place is defiled. They rise from the dead to avenge their honor. Who will win? The living or the living dead? Join John Dresden, Gillian Kesner, Jeff Binney, Raymond King, and Cameron Mitchell. As they band together with the incredible power of raw force, untamed and unleashed to kill.
Welcome to the Projection Booth. I'm your host, Mike White. Joining me is the Wizard of the West, the Emer of the East, the Sage of the South, and the Nanook of the North, Mr. Rob St. Mary.
If you call me the Motor City Madman, we be fighting, sir.
And back for another round of abuse is Outside the Cinema's Bill by Force.
Okay, I have a couple of issues with the intro. Why does Rob get this giant thing that's like, yo, this dude is awesome. I'm going to give him all these cool names. And oh, by the way, Bill's here too.
Well, I was kind of paying homage to the Outside the Cinema way that you introduced Mr. Chris. Normally, Rob doesn't even get one title. This time he gets four.
He actually tells me when he's on the show until halfway through it.
It's like every once in a while you hear Rob go, yeah.
And you tell him, Mike.
He's my hype man.
That's right. I'm the Flavor Flav to his Chuck D.
Yeah, boy. Rob is always cold lamping.
Can't do nothing for you, man.
You took it too far. That's too far. I'm happy to be back, but I would love to say that. Despite my my original appearance on the show, I'm very happy to be back with you.
Yeah, hopefully you don't have another frightful night here on the Projection Booth.
Well, I do happen to have an entire sleeve of Raw Force tattoos, so I guess we'll be all right then.
You're definitely an expert then. I'm all ready for talking about Raw Force. So yes, we are talking Raw Force, a.k.a. Kung Fu Cannibals. The alternate title really kind of gives you the highlights of the film, Kung Fu and Cannibals. But wait, there's more. You also get some zombie samurai, a guy who looks like Hitler, and more bear boobs than you can shake a stick at if shaking sticks at bear boobs is your thing, of course. Raw Force is a film from Edward D. Murphy. That's not the comedian with a penchant for tranny hookers. No, that's Eddie Murphy. This is Edward D. Murphy. Not to be confused with Edward D. Wood. Edward D. Murphy helmed just two films, Raw Force and one called Heated Vengeance, but it seems like he's best known for his acting. If we're to believe IMDb, he is known for, among other things, a bit part in Goodfellas, and he was in over a dozen episodes of Law & Order, but who wasn't? But getting back to Raw Force, there's something irresistible about this film, and as our guest, Bill, what is it about Raw Force that floats your boat?
Okay, so this is a film, to give you guys a little bit of a background, that I'd seen before. We actually reviewed it on an episode Outside the Cinema, episode number 119, available at OutsideTheCinema.com or at Facebook.OutsideTheCinema.com. And I had never heard of it before the first time I had seen it. And I came across it under the title of Kung Fu Cannibals, read the synopsis, and was like, this sounds like either the most amazing exploitation movie ever or the worst idea anyone has ever had. And I think it's pretty safe to say that it kind of, without giving anything away in our review off the top here, it succeeds immensely in some of those areas and falls absolutely flat in a kind of awesome way in the others.
This was kind of in those weird days between my ex-co-host and my new co-host when I was like, kind of like, hey, what kind of movie should I be doing on the show? I'm willing to take suggestions. And somebody suggested Raw Force. I don't know who it was. Could have been you, Bill. I don't know. You might have been, you know, under an assumed name or something going, hey, Raw Force is a great movie. So I put down on the list. I sent the list out, you know, who wants to co-host with me on this? You, being a brave man, raised your hand. And then Rob was asking me last week, why are we doing this film?
Yeah, yeah.
What was it about this one? I said, it was a request, and I really don't know why, but I think it's kind of awesome.
It is. Yeah. It has some amazing moments in it. Do we want to do like a plot synopsis for people? Because this is the plot. When you hear the plot, it makes it seem even more like outlandish. Raw Force, a.k.a. Kung Fu Cannibals, is basically a Philippines-made, a U.S.-produced, or at least I believe it was U.S. production companies behind it. In the 70s and 80s, lots of companies went down to the Philippines because it was cheap. I know Corman did a ton of stuff down there. A lot of the – almost all of the women in prison films that were made down there. And this was kind of made, I believe, towards the tail end of it. So, you know, they take all of your major exploitation elements. You have zombies, cannibals, naked chicks, blood, piranhas, slapstick comedy, and Nazis all rolled into this thing. And the story is based around a cruise ship that is heading out to bring people to these different exotic locales. One of the locales is a place that's called Warrior Island. Now, the story, I believe, behind Warrior Island is probably the most amazing part of the film. Am I wrong? If you're led to believe what they say, it's a story about where martial artists go to die, but it's only like the evil martial artist, or the word they use is disgraced, I think. They're going to this island where disgraced martial artists go to die. Sounds like a tourist locale to me, right?
Well, they do have that beautiful brochure on it, even too.
Brochure?
That they're reading at the whorehouse. There just happens to be a brochure about Warrior's Island there, which I thought was great.
It's just because there's nothing on the island other than just bad news. Well, there's a band of monks that are cannibals. Well, the monks were kind of the cannibals, right? It doesn't even matter. So you have these monks, and then you have all of the dead martial artist zombie guys that come back. So through a rather extreme chain of events, you have these Nazi people / village people dressed biker wannabes that are trading women for jade on the island. You have a karate class and all these other people on this cruise ship that get mixed up in it somehow in, I don't know, Manila or somewhere. And so they basically, it's one of those they see too much and they decide to kill them. And you have this amazing party, as we talked about a little bit at the beginning, on the boat, and then also followed by an amazing siege of the boat by, like I said, the village people in, you know, biker helmets. And they end up, you know, they destroy the boat or whatever, and then they end up going to Warrior Island, and that's where all of your zombie and cannibal madness really kind of culminate.
That was a brilliant synopsis.
Not going to lie, I took notes.
You kind of have to, just because of all the ways that these characters are interacting. Adolf Hitler guy showing up here and there, and it's like, what does he really have to do with these people over here, and why wouldn't he want them to go to Warriors Island? But by its own way, it does have its own kind of little internal logic going on.
Boy, there's no doubt it's the type of movie that when you hear, like, and obviously you can bring that synopsis down to just basically like you have martial artists fighting cannibals, fighting zombies and Nazis, and there's also lots of sex. So if that doesn't intrigue you, then don't watch the movie. But who's that not going to intrigue?
The only thing they could have added is vampires and werewolves, and then I think they would have had every possible genre covered.
Well, let's be honest. We know if they had
a car chase, a car chase,
vampires, it just would have fell in comparison to Fright Night, which is obviously the greatest vampire movie ever made.
Yes. Number one on the list.
I'm going to get my digs in where I can.
There are some really incredible set pieces. I wouldn't say that there's some really incredible kung fu going on in this one by any stretch of the imagination, but or samurai-ish kind of stuff. It's weird that like the samurais are hanging out with the martial artists. To me, I always thought they'd be like kind of in different camps. Like maybe there's one island where the disgraced samurai go to, and there's another island where the disgraced martial artists go to. But I guess you can put them all on the same island, and they seem to get along okay.
They would have been in separate camps, but all of the costumes were in the same store.
Oh.
So therefore, they were all in the same camp because they got the costumes all at the same place.
And I was also going to say, Mike, that, see, you're trying to use logic because you understand the various East Asian cultures and how they're all divided. See, these are going to be white folks watching this in America who have no idea the difference between Japanese, Korean, you know, Chinese. So there's no, it doesn't matter. They're all Asian to them.
What I want to know, I want more of a documentary feel to this film a little bit. I want to see the scene where the monks are eating the girls in order to do their devilish rituals to bring back the kung fu guys, because I think that would be pretty bitchin' too.
Kind of a cannibal holocaust kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's in the extended Blu-ray cut that will be coming out one of these days, but I don't know. I think that would be pretty cool to see.
And I'm also expecting more Borscht Belt jokes, like I had a lot of companies after me, you know, like the phone company and the electric company and things like that. More Borscht Belt comedy as well that seems to be written into this thing.
I'm not going to say it's a perfect film, but
to me, it feels like a movie that was like patched together out of maybe three different films, because as we talked about Hitler guy and his like henchman character, they never seem to quite interact directly with some of the other folks in the film. And it also has, much like I was talking about, what movie was it recently that we reviewed? But the whole idea of is it action or is it porn? And at times this thing seems to be leering towards like, hey, we may have shot hardcore and then pulled the hardcore out and then gave you this. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of have this this kind of tone to it. So that's – I mean, I can understand the charms of it, but it's not something that's top of my list.
I have to say, Rob, you're 100% right when you say that it seems like it was a number of scripts, then none of them were filled out enough, and they pushed them into one. Last week, we did American Ninja 4, The Annihilation. That's another film that kind of was like this, where – It felt like they had three or four different things going on. None of them quite worked right, so they put them all together, but never bothered to even the tones of them.
They never did the rewrite to kind of pull them all together.
No, they just took the three stories they had and literally just put them on top of each other, mixed up the pages, and then handed them to the actors.
This movie came out in, what, 82? Probably that kind of golden era of we'll put anything out on VHS that exists pretty much. Had I seen this when I was 10, 12 years old, I think I would have thought that this was the best film ever made.
Yeah, it definitely has that vibe of that era, you know, that late 70s, early 80s cheap action film. And I love some of the stuff that's in here that's just ridiculous, especially this, like, party on the boat scene.
That goes on forever.
It goes on forever, but there are, like, all of these, like, little quick stupid jokes that's kind of, like, bordering on, like, Benny Hill and Borscht Belt stuff, where there's, like, one guy who's talking about how he's a male stripper, and then, like, the bartender starts hitting on this gal, and then, like, breaks the ice with his head.
There are a lot of people here.
Look at them. They're packed in like sardines.
I think it's somebody's birthday.
What'd you say your name was?
Cookie Renshaw.
How long you been a cop?
4 years. What do you do?
I'm a male stripper.
Really? That's interesting. Excuse me.
Ever hear of the Stallion Gang in Marina Del Rey?
No.
Hey, I'm the star attraction there.
Could I have another sweet vermouth on the rocks?
Sure, coming right up.
If I may drop trivia on you guys from the party scene, you know, the couple that are in the bathroom that are trying to make the sex, the girl is actually Camilla Keaton from I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she did big things after I Spit on Your Grave as girl in toilet in Kung Fu Cannibals, a.k.a. Raw Force.
She got to go to the Philippines, which is pretty nice. There you go.
Maybe I'm wrong in it, but this film is so inherently just soaked in that cheaply shot Philippines, you know, mess of movies that was made in the late 70s and early 80s. Like, it just, like, from the second it starts and you have, like, the shot of, like, the plane, you're like, oh, this is filmed in the Philippines, just by the look of it.
Well, then yeah. Vic Diaz shows up and just erases all doubt that it could have been shot anywhere else. Even from that first scene when you got almost everybody is overdubbed and not necessarily as good as it could have been. And then when that samurai comes out, the undead samurai comes out and he's all in slow motion and nobody else is. And it's like, what's happening?
I love the like obvious slow-mo on some of the zombie stuff, you know, like the undead
stuff. On some of the zombie stuff, they show up on the screen at any point except when they're in slow motion. Not to jump ahead, there's the scene at the end, towards the tail end when everything is kind of getting like, you know, ramping up, and there's the one that seems like he's like hiding in like the closet, and he very slowly opens the door to the closet and then very slowly shrieks back and has nothing to do with anything, but it's in slow motion.
Yeah, in all post done slow motion. This was not shot slow-mo. It was like slowed down, I don't know, maybe in like a video toaster or something, because man, it looks bad.
You know, it's kind of like that 3D post process they do nowadays. You know, same kind of thing.
That only better.
Yeah, this one didn't give me headaches.
I've been eyeing you since Long Beach.
Yeah?
Care for a drink?
Okay.
How about a green grave digger this time?
A green grave digger. What in the hell is that?
Vodka, cream de menthe, and a lot of cracked ice.
Hey, babe, your straps are down.
Oh, it's time for them.
Sure. Oh. Hey, I'm sorry.
Have you seen Eileen?
She left with Big John after they got hit with the cake.
We can't not talk about the religious freak at the party either. He is my favorite character. Oh my God. It doesn't get better than this guy.
The setup to it's even better because they're trying to hook everybody up. And first of all, where did all these people come from on the boat?
I have no idea, because it seems like there are more people at the party.
And people keep showing up, but aren't they out at sea? They introduce this one girl to this other guy, and they're like, oh, she's a model, and she has a photo shoot coming up. And his response is something along the lines of, what are you doing it for? Can I do a dramatic reading of the scene with the religious freak and Betty?
Welcome to the Projection Booth Masterpiece Theater with Bill Byforce reading from the classic script, Raw Force.
Religious freak, tell me about the centerfold you're doing.
The centerfold? Well, it's not really positive for sure yet. Well, we still have to...
Well, what are you doing it for?
The money?
Well, like I said, I don't know if I...
For the publicity?
Well, sure. You're not doing it for the publicity.
I know why you're doing it.
Well, why am I doing it then?
For the devil.
The devil?
Yeah, look around this place. It's the devil's den.
Are you joking?
No, Betty. The devil is no joke.
End scene.
All right, we're going to take a break and play an interview with Raw Force's producer and cinematographer, Frank E. Johnson, after a word from our sponsors here on the Projection Booth.
itfollows.net.
All right, I'm here with Bill Byforce and Mr. Chris to tell you a little bit about Outside the Cinema.
All right, Reverend Scott, take us to church.
What can we expect to find from a typical show?
2 hours of just random blabber.
Is there anyone's coattails you rode in on to popularity?
I'm the guy that f***ing burns the coattails and then pisses on them.
You review all these exploitation, horror, comedy, cult, and often all-around terrible movies. You must have a strong driving force that keeps you going.
Ego.
I don't know if I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, I've been saying that for a while.
Really?
I have been saying that for a while. Also, I'm high on smack.
Well, it's definitely working for you guys. People are coming out in droves to support you on iTunes.
We just the other day got a one-star review on iTunes.
Well, that is one star too many. Let me tell you, the worst f***ing piece of shit I've ever heard.
This has been great, guys.
Thanks, Scott. That was good. Oh, he's got you crying over there.
I'm good for the rest of the year.
Nice.
That was too much.
We interrupt your podcastual programming for this HollywoodLeak.com news break. Here's the latest from HollywoodLeak.com. own network tanking. Oprah wants her cars back. Seal grows mustache, changes his name to Walrus. And a quick pilot casting update, you didn't get it. Entertainment news is always leaking. For these stories and more, go to HollywoodLeak.com.
Everyone wants to spice things up in the bedroom. Here's an offer you won't want to miss. For a limited time, you'll get 50% off just about any one item at AdamandEve.com. Yes, get 50% off when you use the coupon code BOOTH at checkout, as in John Wilkes Powers or the Projection Booth. But that's not all. You'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs and free shipping on your entire order. Too good to be true? It's not. Check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Once again, that coupon code is BOOTH at AdamandEve.com.
I'd like to ask you some questions about Raw Force.
Yeah, you know, I just saw that film on eBay, and they had a list of horror, 50 worst horror films, or something like that, and I couldn't resist buying it. I bought myself a DVD copy of it.
When you guys shot it, it was Raw Force, right? Not Kung Fu Cannibals?
No, actually, it was called Warriors Island, was the script, and then the distributor changed it to Raw Force just as we delivered it. That's how it went out, as Raw Force. And then someone else picked it up over the years as that Kung Fu Cannibals, wherever that came from. I had no idea.
Well, it kind of made sense. Didn't they eat the girls for their secret powers on the island?
Yeah, and that was the gist of the movie, as bizarre as it was. That's what I guess people remembered.
Tell me about your involvement with this. How did you get involved in the picture?
Well, the director was a guy named Ed Murphy, and Ed and I had struck up a relationship in Hollywood a couple of years before, and they were trying to put together some movies, and I had done a movie over in the Philippines a couple of years prior. It was an action-adventure thing, and I told them you know, take that script and adapt it for the Philippines, and maybe we could put together a deal, and that's what we did. He had some sources over there. I had some sources. We got together, and we ended up going over there to make the movie. It was quite an experience.
Yeah, what was it like shooting in the Philippines at that time?
By that time, it was quite interesting. It was still during the Marcos regime, of course, and it was just a different atmosphere of filmmaking and people and cooperation you got from the government for certain things, and it was actually quite nice. We had a great cooperation and a terrific crew and some good people over there. They were ambitious filmmakers. They liked to help in every aspect, so we got the best of the people over there to help us and pulled this thing off. And it was kind of crazy. I mean, Ed Murphy was had his ideas on filmmaking and kind of bizarre at some points, but I enjoyed it because I was shooting the movie. I was the director of photography, and I was putting together all the people and places and producing it, and it was quite fun.
Yeah, how did you hook up with him? Because wasn't this like his first directing gig?
That was his first gig. He had been an actor. I think he did a few things around Hollywood those days in the 70s, and I can't remember how we hooked up, but all of a sudden I had a meeting with him, and he was talking about he wanted to make a movie, and he had a script, and he had never done one before, and he wanted to know how to do it. He wanted to know how he can get some financing, and how he can get some actors, and how he can get people like me to help him physically make the movie. And then I don't recall exactly how we met, but it was some kind of friendship in Hollywood. We got together and introduced us. But he had not done a film before as far as a director, but he had been involved as an actor.
So did you kind of help direct by proxy, or was this his own just?
Oh, yeah. I kind of made the film for him. He had his ideas as far as the story and what he wanted to see, but I visually put it together for him. I was the director of photography, so I set up all the scenes and all the actors, and I was in charge of the lighting and the camera, and I virtually shot the movie for him and set up every scene. And then when we got back to Hollywood, my company was also an editor, so we put together the movie for him as far as the editing and music and the mixing, and delivered it for him to his distributor. So he had a distribution company in Hollywood that wanted to distribute the film. I ended up, doing the editing and delivering the film. But he got the credit as a director because it was his project. He actually got most of the money together, and he was calling the shots. as far as that.
When he came to you with this idea, I mean, it's a pretty out there idea, I'll just say that. But what did you think of it at the time?
I wasn't so much in tune to the story. I just thought the opportunity to make another movie in the Philippines would be terrific. I like shooting and I like action pictures, and this came along as a just another chance to do a movie and shoot a movie, and then do it in the Philippines, where I just got done doing something with a lot of people over there, and a lot of contacts, a lot of friends, and I thought, wow, this would be great to put together another movie, and looked at the script, and I said, wow, it's, you know, it's kind of bizarre, but I could see some great locations and some interesting characters, and we could have some fun making it.
Yeah, you guys did have some amazing locations.
Oh, yeah, we were all over the place. You know, we were on a boat for a while, and we were up in the jungles, and we were on lakes, and we were in just all kinds of stuff. It's just amazing the amount of ground we covered in this crazy little story, and it was just nice. It was fun.
As far as, like, real physical location kind of stuff, what were you all over the Philippines, or were you pretty much in just one little area?
We were basically in the capital there, Manila, which is a big metropolis. We were outside in the suburbs or the jungles below it, and we were on the beaches, we were on the docks, so we were everywhere. There was no stage work. It was strictly on location. Whatever we had in the film, whatever location required, we actually went to that location. So we were traveling a lot in and around the city and outside the city and in the situations we were at, whatever the script called for.
You said you had shot in the Philippines before. You actually shot a couple things there, right?
Yeah, I shot about Project Kill with Leslie Nielsen. I shot that. That was the first film I did over there. And I was a director of photography and produced that one. And that had a good cast, too. Like, nice little story, and all over the area in Manila, in and out of the city, and that was a little more mainstream story as opposed to this crazy Ralph Force idea, and actually had some pretty good talent in that one as far as acting, and the story worked real nice together, and had some beautiful locations, and I put together a nice looking film there. Then I went back a couple years later and did a picture called The Last Reunion, which was a... Cameron Mitchell was in that one also, and it was a World War II flashback movie, and soldiers come back for a reunion 30 years later, and that was a revenge story, and that turned out to be kind of fun, a lot of action and kung fu in that one. That's kind of where we got borrowed a lot of the Raw Force people as far as the action and the kung fu and the sword fighting and what have you, and I did a lot of that in The Last Reunion, and I was able to go back a couple of years later and get a whole full same people and same crew I was using. We put together Raw Force.
What was it like working with Cameron Mitchell?
Well, Cameron Mitchell, he was, at that point, he was getting up in his age and the career, and he was just going along for the adventure, going overseas to make another movie. And he was very fun, very funny, very cooperative. He enjoyed making the movie and just being there and being involved in the whole process. He was no problem, and always show up and work and did his work, and it was a pleasure to work with him.
Was it a requirement when you shot in the Philippines to have Vic Diaz in your movie?
Seemed that way. I mean, he was kind of the mainstay bad guy. I guess the word we used him in The Last Reunion, and that's why I used him on Ralph Force. I think he didn't play that role. Yeah, he was one of those guys that would, he was kind of the character actor of the 80s and 70s of the Philippines. If you went there to make a movie, he's the guy you wanted to get. He was terrific. But whatever the role he was with, him was always kind of an oddball character, bad guy, and yeah, he was fun to work with.
What was he like in real life?
Much the same. Just a jolly fella, you know, just always laughing and having a good time, and enjoyed hanging around with the crew quite a bit. He was just the type of guy, was just one of the guys. He would just like to be on the set making the movie, and he would hang around. He wasn't doing his part, he'd still be there just hanging around, talking to actors and talking to the crew and just being involved in the whole process of making the movie.
I've always been curious about the guy with the Hitler stash in the movie, as far as, was he supposed to be Hitler, or was he just like a big fan or something?
That was a strange situation. I don't even know myself. Ed Murphy had found him in the Philippines out one night. I don't even recall how he even got involved in the fact that Ed just, you ought to be in my movie and I got a role for you, and all of a sudden, this guy showed up, and he had that mustache on, and he wore a white suit, kind of had a tick in his eye, kept on blinking one eye, and he was just very comical. He wasn't a very good actor. I don't think he was an actor. I think he was some other businessman in the Philippines. But he just, Ed thought he'd be perfect for the role of this strange character. And I guess he was. He was just so out of it that it seemed to work for the situation. But yeah, he was kind of a unknown quality to me. I had no idea who we were getting there. That guy came on the set. He had that Hitler-type mustache. And like you say, he wasn't really an actor.
Other than Kung Fu and zombies, you guys also had just tons and tons of gratuitous nudity, and I really appreciate that about this film.
Yeah, that was kind of the deal. I mean, it was a shot of them carrying these women in these cages, these monks and these nude women, and just it was hot. It was fun. You know, obviously putting this movie together, and there's a lot of skin in the movie. Yes, it wasn't born to cut any skin. It was just a lot of naked ladies that they like, and it just seemed to be apropos for the story we were making, and it worked out. It worked out fun.
This film really has something for everybody.
We had no idea. We had no idea what we had. I mean, we had a script, and we had some actors, and we had a vision to put it together, and we photographed it and did the scenes, and we got all set and done, went back to the United States to cut it together, and it was a conglomeration of a lot of stuff, and the movie was what it was. It was just, it didn't make too much sense. There was no comprehension to it, but yet it seemed to work. It was just, it seemed to make somewhat of a story with a lot of oddball characters and oddball settings, and you don't know why, but we put it together and we delivered it to the distributor, and he actually put it out on DVD, and it kind of went around. People kind of saw it. It was one of those, you know, horror films that was so bad that it was good.
Did it ever run theatrically?
I don't think it ever had a theatrical projection. I do not. I think it was written a DVD. It was also the same time that the Raiders of the Lost Ark came out. And Ed always liked to compare it to that movie. Obviously, there was no way near that one, but it was the same feeling as the airplane we had going across the ocean. And it was kind of an odd coincidence that those two movies are out at the same time. But I don't think that Ralph Force ever made that theater, so I don't recall it ever going to a print at the lab and shipping print.
So I have to ask at the very end, the to be continued, when can we expect the Raw Force sequel?
Raw Force 2?
Yeah.
No, I haven't talked to Ed Murphy in 20 years. I don't even know where the guy's at right now. He's still around Hollywood, I think, and don't know what he does. At one point, he was a lawyer, I know. It'd be fun to maybe connect with him again and say, hey, why don't we do a sequel? See if we can pull it together and make something strange out of it. Yeah, that'd be something fun to do. And all those characters are gone now. Everybody's dead. To put it all together again with a different cast and a different, you know, kind of pick up where we left off and see what we can do something with.
If you got all those folks together from Amazing Race, you're still just kind of recast them all into Raw Force 2. Off you go. Gutenberg, grow a mustache.
Yeah, there you go. Find that character again. I went back to the Philippines, and I was there a few years later working on the Chuck Norris movie. But then that was it. I mean, 87 was like almost 25 years. I imagine all those people or characters are pretty well gone or retired.
Yeah, you worked again with Murphy on Heat of Vengeance, right?
We went back here to another little movie. It wasn't nearly as eventful as this one. It was a little movie he wrote again, and it just didn't have the character to it. It was just trying to be a big blockbuster Hollywood movie when it wasn't. It just didn't have the money for that, and the story just was too mainstream to even pull together as a run-of-the-mill movie, so it really never went anywhere.
You've worked with some really amazing folks, though. I mean, both behind the camera and in front over the years.
Over the years, I've had a great career of characters and people and actors. And my resume, looks pretty good. I mean, I have worked with some legends of Hollywood, as you say, and some great people and some fun times trying to go on and do some more. So that's what I'm doing right now. We're on the project together.
Well, yeah, it seems like you've got a good film, and you're, you know, hopefully going to get that out so everybody can see it. Is there any kind of a website or anything where folks can go check it out, see where it's playing near them?
Well, AmazingRaceForTheMovie.com. You can go to that, and that'll give you a trailer, and it'll give you all the information you need from that.
All right, we're back. That was Frank E. Johnson, the cinematographer and producer of Raw Force, a.k.a. Kung Fu Cannibals. Be sure to watch out for Mr. Johnson's latest film, Amazing Racer, which stars one of Bill's favorite actors in the world, Mr. Steve Guttenberg.
I love Steve Guttenberg. No fucking joke.
I'm still waiting for Steve, man. He's apparently he's real busy right now.
He's the Gutenberg. Of course he's busy.
There's, you know, babies to be rescued and cats to be taken out of trees and all that stuff. Steve Gutenberg can never sleep. Bill, when you chose to do this one on your show on OTC, outside the cinema dot TV dot outside the cinema dot Facebook dot net dot com dot org, what made you guys choose this one?
Well, like most, you know, most of us are obviously we're into, you know, those kind of nuggets of golden cinema that we never knew about. The way I do a lot of the searching for films for OTC is just like piggybacking off of other movies on like IMDb and like the Grindhouse database and places like that. And this came up as a suggestion after doing one of the cannibal films. I don't know. I think it was either Eaten Alive or one of those films. And I don't understand how the connection is other than the fact that like there's cannibals. So, but I saw it listed as the title Kung Fu Cannibals. So I'm like, well, that right there sounds fucking awesome. Then I went on to IMDb and I read the synopsis and was like, this sounds like it has anything you could ever want in, you know, a shitty exploitation movie. And sure enough, after watching it, it's funny too, because we did it a long time ago. It was, you know, two and a half, three years ago. And when I first said that I wanted to do it with you guys, I wasn't sure. I couldn't remember how much I liked it, like, or if I liked it. And part of me kept telling myself, why did you commit to do this? Because you hated this movie the first time you watched it. So I went back before rewatching it again and listened to our review of it. And I apparently really, really loved it the first time I watched it. And of course, my co-host Chris was like, this is stupid. What's wrong with you? This movie's terrible. And I'm like, I really, really liked it. And upon the second watch, which I actually did earlier today to make sure I had it as fresh in my mind as I could, what makes this film likable is the fact that when they made it, you could tell their hearts were in the right place and they were trying to make a good action, horror, thriller amalgamation of all these different genres. And they were really trying, but they didn't know what they were doing. You love it because, goddamn, they tried. And you love it because it's just ridiculous. And these guys that made this were very, like, they didn't seem like they really knew what they were doing with it. But every now and then you get that, you know, perfect storm of things that hit, like, you know, like The Room or any of those, you know, So Bad It's Good movies, any of the old Ed Wood movies where, you know, like the heart's in the right place. And it's funny that, you know, you mentioned Ed Wood earlier, obviously because of the names, but it's in that kind of wheelhouse of films that have a soul, but there's no talent. Well, I shouldn't say there's no talent, but there's no, you know, talent.
My thing on it is just, it just seems like such a collage piece. Like there's so many different elements that like don't kind of fit together and they clash off each other. Like going back to that boat scene, I mean, it just goes on forever and there's like all these corny jokes. And then, like I said, it never seems that like Hitler guy and his henchmen are ever in the same scene with the other people. And then there's the monks and I'm just kind of like, okay, how does this all kind of weave together? But I mean, maybe that's part of the charm of it.
It's funny, you know, because you can make fun of the film very easily, but there is something that is very charming about it. And I will have to say that every time I've watched this, and I think I've watched it probably three or four times now, I have enjoyed it each time. You know, there were a few times, like the very first time that I watched it, I really had no idea what to make of it, even as I was watching it, especially just, you know, there's one character who seems to be more dubbed than the other characters. So whenever he's on screen, it's just like, what the hell's going on? He just like kind of his voice is so much louder than everybody else's that's on screen. But even with like the technical errors and all that, I was still just like, okay, yeah, I can believe this. And I guess it did kind of take me back to when I was a kid and just thinking, God, this would have been the best movie in the world had I seen it back then. I mean, really, having so many great elements and especially just as many bare breasts as you possibly could, you know, even imagine in a film, it was, yeah, okay, great. And I mean, the movie almost starts off with a pair of bare breasts where it's like, as soon as they get to the island, they're like, okay, you know, take that girl's top off. It's like, all right, I just got to, you know, buckle the seatbelt. I'm in for the ride here. Let's go.
And the thing, too, is all the women, well, maybe not all, but most of the women in the film, they're all really good looking, too.
Yeah, a lot of them. I would have to say that first batch of girls that they bring over, maybe not so much. And it was kind of funny how the girl was just so like, you know, oh, I don't want to show my breasts, even though her tan lines showed that she's pretty much comfortable with showing anything other than maybe just the nipples, you know, because just that one little strip across the chest was not as tan as the rest. But the rest of it, you could tell she had just been, you know, very low cut bikinis and that kind of stuff.
Well, in her line of work.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it took me a while, too, to realize that the, you know, it kind of reminded me of that whole, like, slave trade thing where they get they buy the molasses and they take it over here and they make rum out of it. And then they take the rum and they go over here and they trade it for slaves. And then they take this back there and they sell the slaves for molasses or whatever, all that kind of thing. It really reminded me of that because you got the prostitutes that feed into the jade from the island. And then the jade goes to these guys. And, you know, so they've got like this whole system worked out where I guess if I was the Adolf Hitler guy, I would be really kind of pissed if these American tourists came in and just kind of screwed up my shit.
There's a line that the Adolf Hitler guy says at one point that's to the hippie guy when they're flying over the boat and they see that the boat's there and they're like, oh, they're still alive or whatever. And he's like, oh, you can't do anything right. He's like, you stupid son of a bitch. And he says to him, you should have been destroyed at birth.
Yes.
And then says, that's what I get for teaming up with a bunch of hippies.
And I love in that interview with Frank where it's just like, you know, where did that guy come from? He's like, I don't know. Ed got him from somewhere. It's like, I want to know that guy's story. I want to know where they got the Hitler guy from.
Well, then there's the one random guy during the fight in the boat that comes in with, like, the old school helmet with the swastika in, like, masking tape on it. Like, they tried to play obviously, you put a guy into that movie and you put him in a Hitler mustache, you're playing the Nazi angle. But that's like all there is of it.
Yeah, they don't really follow that up with like maybe there was a secret base or he escaped from the American occupation or something like that. Like maybe he's been hiding out in Brazil all these years. But yeah, there's nothing like that one there. There's a lot of dead ends. Apparently, there has been an audio commentary for this that's been produced. The Code Red DVD got Edward D. Murphy into a studio and got him to record an audio commentary. So I was like, oh, cool. So Murphy's still around. He's still hanging out. So I went to Code Red and I was like, hey, we're going to do a show on this movie. You know, can you maybe put me in contact with Mr. Murphy? That'd be great. And the guy who wrote back, it was like the most bizarre logic I've ever heard. He was like, I don't want anybody interviewing Murphy because they might take his voice from that interview and put it on their copy of the DVD and then kind of scoop them with this audio commentary.
What?
Yeah, it was absolutely bizarre. And then the other thing was,
you sure you didn't write to Rob by accident and he's just...
And I said, so, you know, when is the DVD going to come out? Because we'd like to at least talk about that, at least kind of give you a plug and, you know, say when it's going to come out. We're not going to put out the DVD until there's enough interest in having this out on DVD. And I said, so again,
it's never maybe going to come out.
Yeah, I was like, so again, it'd be kind of cool if I got Mr. Murphy and we talked to him because then maybe it would get more people to listen to the show and get more interest in the movie. So, yeah, apparently they're still smarting over the release of The Visitor, which they took a major loss on. And I can't say I'm too surprised having seen The Visitor, but it's like, okay, you know, you guys put out this huge deluxe DVD of The Visitor. It was a great movie and everything, but, you know. Yeah, exactly. It's not like people are clamoring for The Visitor.
I mean, I've been writing in to Code Red for 5 years for a copy of that weekly on my typewriter.
Of Raw Force or of The Visitor?
Both. In the same letter, which they got confused by. But I'm afraid I don't want them to use my typewriter written word and put on someone else's DVD.
Because they might take your letters that you hand mail to them and put them in as the liner notes.
Could you imagine?
Don't even think about the movie because you can psychically transfer that information to someone else, thereby sending the pictures and ideas of the movie into the brain of someone across the world who can then download their brain into a DVD recorder, and then they will put the DVD out before us. So don't even think about the movie.
Rob, now you're just getting silly.
Yeah, that's some Videodrome-like stuff right there.
Rob, did the corn god tell you that?
Of course, of course.
Because if you take the name Raw Force and translate it with the corn god language, it comes out to be never on DVD.
It actually comes out to be Visitor Deluxe Edition available now.
Please visit our online web store. All right, so let's go ahead and we're going to take another break here and come back with a preview for next week's show.
Yeah, vida. É o princípio da morte. O que é a morte? É o fim da vida. O que é a existência? É a continuidade do sangue. O que é o sangue? É a razão da existência.
You're hip to Brazilian Portuguese, you know that's the trailer preview to At Midnight I'll Take Your Soul, the first chapter in the Coffin Joe trilogy. We'll be covering that trilogy with the Strange World of Coffin Joe co-director and Coffin Joe biographer Andre Brzezinski. Well, I want to thank this week's special guest, Bill Byforce, and let's talk podcasting, Bill. What's going over on Outside the Cinema?
There's some things happening. Well, no, we do the show weekly. Every Monday we broadcast live. You can watch the show at tv.outsidethecinema.com. I mean, our show, anyone that doesn't know our show, it's, you know, usually two movie reviews and then a third segment of either a top six list, or recently we've been doing coverage of specific actors and actresses, and actually opened up the Outside the Cinema Hall of Fame is our new thing. So we cover anything and everything, you know, anything from stuff like Raw Force to American Ninja to whatever.
Black Noon or whatever the Louis Malle film was.
Oh, Black Moon, the Louis Malle.
Yes.
Have you ever seen that?
I have not yet, but I look forward to seeing it, especially after your review.
Yeah, Rob, have you ever seen it?
No, but I do know his other stuff.
So yeah, it's pretty out there. I'm not a huge Malle fan, but Black Moon is it's a trip, man. It's really good, but it's a trip.
I have to say, I was just listening to the latest OTC as of this recording, as we were as I was driving home tonight, and good stuff as always. I was especially enjoying the Necessary Roughness review because I remembered when that movie opened. I was working at a movie theater as well. I know Chris was working at the theater when that one came out, and yeah, that was something. So I was so happy when you guys played the trailer and I recognized Rob Schneider's voice. I was like, oh yeah, I remember he was in that movie.
Robert Loggia owns in that movie.
Oh yeah. So what's the best address for people to go to see Outside the Cinema?
If you want to get the episodes and, you know, dip your foot in there, you can just go to outsidethecinema.com. If you want to get in touch with us, I recommend our Facebook page, which you can get to at facebook.outsidethecinema.com. And then, and if you ever watch it, live events are at tv.outsidethecinema.com, which is, these are all just fancy redirects to like our live stream page and then our Facebook page. So it's like, I make it, it's make it easier for people, because if you're like, oh yeah, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/EEXX1231875/\22.
That was /\222?
No, double two.
Double two. Okay, so DOUBLE. T-W-O?
No. DOUBLETOO.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, we'll have the link for that up on the... sorry. All right, we'll have the link for that up on the Projection Booth website, which is projection-booth.com/. That's it. That's all there is. And we'll also have links over to Code Red DVD, even though they don't want us to talk about this movie or something. So whatever, we talked about it, and I guess people are just going to have to deal with it now.
Deal with it.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill, for stopping by. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
Oh, thank you guys very much for having me on again. And nobody was even mean to me this time.
Maybe next time.
Well, yeah, you need Rob, you need to, you really need to step up your game.
Yeah, you're not nearly the condescending prick that you need to be.
No, you need to be 50% more condescending and tell me that my opinions are wrong.
Whatever.
Yeah, that dude. and you know what? You can tell him I said that. I don't even care. What's he gonna come onto the internet and be like, ugh, the guy that does the show that, you know, people like and has been on for 5 years said I was a head. I'm not a head. I'm just a good asshole. Sits in my room and cries.
Well, maybe he'll do a special episode just dedicated to how much you suck.
Yeah, well, he will. And it'll come out next March.
I was thinking March of 2016.
Oh, no. That's the episode about you.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's been researching that one.
Yes. A lot of research to prove what a d- guy I am.
Well, at some point, he's going to put one out about Rob, too. I don't even know this guy, but I think he sucks. I heard that he watched Dawn of the Dead, the remake, and actually liked it.
There's no purity to that, man. No purity.
Why would you ever watch a remake and like it? Why would you judge a film with actually seeing it? You can just judge it from the trailer and tell how bad it's going to be. That's what pissed me off the most about that, was telling me that I was wrong in actually liking the trailer and having interest in seeing the film.
How dare you?
How dare I actually want to see the film before I judge whether I like it or not? And you know what? I saw the Friday Night remake, and it wasn't half bad. I mean, I'm not going to say that's, you know, it was great, but as if anyone goes back and listens, I'm not a huge fan of the original one, but whatever. F*** that guy.
Well, anyway, I think he'd have me on the train car to Auschwitz because I don't like Last Action Hero. So there you go.
Oh, it's only because you can't suspend your disbelief, Rob.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. I am now a true believer in that film.
I'm with you on that, Rob, man.
So be it. So
only because every time I've seen it, it's when it was on TNT and it had the worst pan and scan I've ever seen. Like, literally to the point where you can actually see it, like, shift over and then shift back.
Oh, yeah. If you saw that letterboxed on Blu-ray, oh, yeah. Change your opinion. You'd be like, oh, my God, what an insightful masterpiece.
Well,
that's
exactly what I said after I watched the Blu-ray of Britney Spears' Crossroads.
What about that Mariah Carey flick?
Oh, that's just wrong. It's wrong that anyone would ever make fun of that, because it's obviously a cinematic masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece, because if you can't accept that, you must not be able to suspend your disbelief.
Can glitter really be that? I've never seen it, but could it really be that bad?
We should do a night where we get glitter and what was that, From Justin to Kelly, and just that and a case of beer and just go to town.
We used to do, it's funny that you bring up From Justin to Kelly, way back when our show was still fairly young, us and the Gentleman's Guide used to do a lot of joint things together, and we used to do sports bets, and we would do like a Super Bowl bet every year. And the losers had the other show choose, you know, program an episode. So, of course, we won the first one because, well, you know, I mean, listen to me, I'm awesome. We won the first bet. The films we gave them to watch were From Justin to Kelly and Spice World.
I actually like Spice World.
Spice World is actually, if you buy into the campiness of it, you can have a good time watching that. But From Justin to Kelly, like, there's nothing redeeming about that film.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for your time. I'm gonna wrap this up, but we don't have to hang up. So, all right, we'll see you next week. And remember, Betty, the devil's no joke.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say.
Giggity. Yeah, boy.
true.
Dinner tonight, doll baby?
I have a boyfriend back in California.
Say, you're pretty. Do you have a sister?
No, but I have a cousin. Someplace.
You know, like I was saying before, you'd be surprised at the number of sharp girls you meet wearing a forklift.
Would you call them construction groupies?
Oh, jealous.
Should I be?
Next to you, the others are nothing.
Hey, John, more beer?
Hey, Milt, how's life?
All right.
You know, Milt here is a full contact karate champion of the West Coast.
Wow.
Attention, everybody! Today is Steve Pulaski's 30th birthday. Let's hear it.
Woo! Yay! Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Steve. Happy birthday.
You're not concentrating on this. Maybe you're too tense. Don't you have any Vaseline in your purse? Maybe some 3-in-1 oil?
The Stallion Galleon? It's for girls only. Mostly starlets. Some old-timers come there, too. Hey, this famous actress. I think you guys would know her. She sits by the stage. You gotta see her. She shoves $100 bills down my chalk.
My ex-boyfriend couldn't make love to me till I did a striptease first.
What do you call that?
Fetishes. He was into fetishes.
That's really sick.
I don't know. I kind of liked it myself.
Oh, excuse me.
Hi! Can you use a couple more girls?
Sure, come on in.
This is Betty.
Hi.
Hey, what's going on in there? Come on, man. Hey,
you may not believe this, but I've never done anything like this before. You definitely have to relax.
Okay.
Maybe we're getting it.
He's gorgeous, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Would you like to meet him?
You know I would.
Come on, honey.
Show it to
him. My pleasure. We were looking around the room and decided you are the handsomest man here.
Thank you.
My friend Betty is doing a centerfold. I think it's good for her to be seen with attractive-looking men.
Oh.
If you play your cards right, she can be yours. I'm sorry. Hazel sort of...
No problem. Tell me about the centerfold.
The centerfold? Well, it's really not for positive sure yet. Well, we still have...
Why are you doing it? For the money?
Well, gee, like I said, I don't even know if I...
For the publicity?
Well, sure. I guess you could say that I...
You're not doing it for publicity. I know why you're doing it.
Why am I doing it?
For the devil.
The devil?
Yeah. Look around this place. It's the devil's den.
Are you joking?
No, Betty. The devil's no joke.